I really, really struggled that year in terms of the physicality of it. I just could not. I was putting my body through the kind of the ringer. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Weekly Freestyle, episode 52. We're coming back to you with our first remote recording in a short while. I'm back in my house in Bath because I've started training back up here, back at the National Centre. Alex, you're in a very, very special place with some real heritage, some real history. Would you like to tell the people where you are recording from?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. It's lovely to be jumping on another podcast with you this week. I'm, of course, back in the shed. Some of you who have listened before may well know what the shed's about, but I think the most famous podcast that the shed was part of from a recording standpoint was our 50th episode, where we spent a couple of hours in the shed enjoying listener questions, a few J2Os, and just some a good time, really, after enjoying 50 episodes with of our listeners.
So for people who haven't listened to the 50th episode, we went back to play some games, and there was a forfeit at the end of it in which we had to eat a Carolina Reaper pepper, the hottest chili in the world, which you had to order online to get them shipped over, and it said on the side of the box, do not handle without wearing gloves, and we had to eat this thing. So a little bit crazy, but we did it, and you know, the game was whoever lost had to do it, but we ended up obviously both eating one. I was in bits. I didn't sleep that night. I spent the night curled up by the toilet. You know, I don't know about you. My belly was not in a good way.
Yeah, I tried my best to get a few hours of kit, but yeah, there was certainly some worrying minutes. There were some really worrying minutes, actually. Straight after we'd eaten those peppers, yeah. And there's a video out there.
That, well, I you've cooked it down, collated. Didn't I?
You've collated that video, so
I think that gets released.
Well, I think it could get released, but I think the listeners have got to do something for us. I think if we drop a post and it gets a certain number of likes or we get enough comments, then we can release that collated video, because to be honest, it's worth seeing. And I watch it at least 3 times a week.
I watch it every morning and last thing before I go to bed without fail. You know what's quite good is we had a few drinks, a few J2Os between us. And undoubtedly that helped matters, because I would have really, really struggled otherwise. You know, when you've had a few, you know, peach and lime J2Os or whatever, a few looseners, you know, you can maybe, you know, walk back from an evening further than you would, or cycle on a line bike across London or whatever it might be, or, you know, anything. Even if
when it's
cold,
minus 5 degrees.
Exactly. Speaking from experience, they definitely do help. So no, that was the host of the 50th episode. So a bit of a throwback about 18 months ago for us. But we've got a bit of a catch up to do first. We're going to dive in to a little bit of news. We've got a topic of the week. We're going to be reflecting on Paris. And then we are going to finish up with a few questions and a little quiz. So a little bit of a catch up first. We saw each other just the other day. We played golf yesterday, actually, in the freezing conditions. For those of you who don't play golf, normally when you hit the ball onto the bit where the hole is, it's supposed to stop on what's called the green. And instead, they're frozen. So it bounced off like it was landing on a slab of concrete. So it was a bit of a tough round, but we had a pretty good time together. I think it's fair to say. I mean, I think you played quite well. And our friend Luke also played. So that was a lot of fun. I'm now back in Bath, like I said, training, and you're working today as well.
I am. I'm indeed in the middle of my contractual hours, so it's important that everything we do here stays business related, as always. Perfect. But one thing, just going back to the golf there, it was a little bit of a fail because we turned up at your local course ready and raring for I think it was our 10:50 tee time. I was actually there early, but we turned up and the first thing that someone who worked there said, sorry chaps, the course is actually closed, which is obviously a negative. But we then thought, oh, what can we do for the next hour or so while we have a bit of time to kill? And then our thoughts turned to breakfast, and you very kindly offered, because Luke and I, our other friend, had made the journey across to actually buy our breakfast for us. Mm-hmm. But for some reason,
baffles me what you're about to say.
So you and our other friend Luke ordered a wonderful full breakfast. You know, it had all the trimmings, hash browns, baked beans, bacon. You know, I'm sure there would have been vegan and vegetarian alternatives if that was what you would have required. But I just went for a roll, a white roll with a fried egg.
And egg. Single egg. Bread. Oh, that's it. Yeah. I was like, you want a full English, a full fry up, you know, a little bit of, no, bread, egg, bread. two drops of ketchup, done. So didn't even get a double flat white. You just went for a single. Only went for a little mocha, and that was all. So yeah, I think Luke Withers and I had the right idea going for the full breakfast. But no, it was cold. It was a cold, cold, cold weekend. I had an event on in London on the Saturday night, a Team GB dinner, which was good fun. And yeah, honestly, cycling back to the station after that was brutal. It was a real, real chilly one. So yeah, starting to warm up slightly now. But yeah, I'm back down in the southwest. Had a gym and a swim this morning, which was good fun. Just slowly, slowly getting back into things. I've got a pretty steady week of training this week, and then I'm catching up with our friend and fellow Team GB athlete Ben Proud on the weekend, just to catch up with him and touch base, and hopefully go around to his new place in London for a little bit of food. But we've got loads and loads of stuff to dive into this week. So do you want to kick us off, Buck?
Yeah, I can certainly do that. We've not actually had Mr. Ben Proud on the podcast just yet. Just
Which
thinking.
baffled me because he's a close friend of both of
He's a close friend,
us.
but also
Come
he's got
on,
wonderful speakers in his living room. He has
Oh,
the
incredible.
finest speakers that you'll ever see or hear. So maybe we should get him on just to ask him about that. But yeah, we'll dive in to the TWF dive-in section of the podcast, which is usually a section where we try and cover maybe some of the latest swimming news of the week. We're struggling to find any key
There's not been
news
much.
right
I'm trying
now.
to think. I'm really trying to think. I think, right now this kind of winter block, people are just training. People are just putting in the yards. Every week you can speak about a football match or two, and that's why those football podcasts do so well, because you can watch a build up, you can watch the coverage during, and then you can watch a review. So there's three episodes twice. You get six episodes of stuff in pretty much every
Easy.
single
They're
week.
so
So
easy to do.
easy,
They're so easy to
easy.
do.
Yeah, you see these guys, and look, you are a big fan of the Anfield Wrapped. I've listened to a few episodes as
Yeah,
well. They've got content for days.
I'm actually a premium subscriber now as well.
Exactly, premium subscriber. So there we go. There is content for days. Swimming, obviously, we have a big meet in the summer, but around that, there's not loads of stuff. I'm trying to think whether people have posted any quick times, anything like that. I don't think so. I really am struggling. It's a bit of a slow news week. So I think people, competitions will start to ramp up as we head towards the spring. Obviously, there are all the trials in kind of April time, between April and June, pretty much. So yeah, there'll be some exciting news coming out of there, but not much to report this side. There have been a few big sporting events over the weekend, which has been quite exciting. Liverpool obviously won their game 4-0, which was good. And you watched that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I was just watching from home there. But it was nice to relax on the sofa and watch that. But I think just going back to the swimming news stuff, I think that's our job to create swimming news and to
We're not going to create fake news like we
No, we're not
should.
going to create fake news, but we're going to survey the swimming scene and we're going to find those stories. Because you know what, Tom? Those stories are out there. You know,
Yeah,
there are
you're right.
wonderful swimmers both inside and outside of Britain, and there's news, there's things that are worth
Yeah.
discussing. So I think maybe
Well, a big development in the swimming world is, of course, the opening of the Newlands pool. Another
big development.
site out of which our swim school, the Tomlin Swim School, is operating, which is super exciting, and that launched last week. So, there is news. There is the grassroots of swimming is alive and well, and we're very, very lucky to be a part of that. So, yeah, there are stories. There are stories to be found wherever you look. In your own world, in
Yeah.
your sport specifically, can you give us a quick update on the 10K results recently? Was it Valencia? I'm talking about Valencia.
Yes, you are very right there, Tom. Valencia 10K, which is, although it sounds a little bit niche, it's actually regarded as probably the quickest road race over 10K in the world at any point in the year. So a lot of athletes from, particularly in Europe, but also from around the world, descend on Valencia, which has obviously been quite hard hit by flooding recently. So thankfully, I think the city is sort of recovering and they've been able to host the race. But I know a lot of fundraising efforts are going towards that, which is also great. But yeah, thankfully they've been able to put the race on. And there was actually a British record. So the current holder, and I think this is why it could be relevant, was actually Sim O'Farah, joint with Emil Kares. I haven't actually got the previous record time to hand, but there's a new record which was broken by a man. He's actually a young man, Rory Leonard. I think he's about our age, so he must be 24, 25. And he ran. Tom, do you know the time he ran? Or
Yeah,
do you
it
want
was
to guess?
27:38 off the top of
That's
my head.
it. Spot on.
And I was thinking about this, and we spoke about it briefly. Obviously, another friend of the pod, Alex Yee, Olympic champion in his own right in triathlon, did a cracking time. I think it's a personal best for him, which is really exciting at the 10K. And it looks like he's putting a bit more of an emphasis on some of his longer runs this season with a nod towards the London Marathon in April time. So it'll be interesting to obviously see what he goes there. But, Rory, as in Rory Leonard, who broke the British record, he is about our age, he's 23. Obviously a cracking time there. But is it fair to say he's not really got major results to his name just yet? He's European under 23 champion. He's obviously done some cross events, under 23s again, under 23 team, results and medals to his name. But, I asked you straight off the bat, was he at the games?
Yeah.
Where was he at Paris? Was he in Tokyo? Has he won world championships? I mean, is he going to be competitive? Is he going to be a name that's going to be spoken about more now?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Tom. And actually, when you look at him as an athlete, he's still very much in kind of the development stage of his career. So actually, for him to go and post a time like that is incredible. And to be honest, I'm not sure if he would have expected to do that. One thing that is quite interesting, we have this discussion a lot, is that there's a difference between in running, especially in other sports, championship racing and just racing fast. And this is very much of an example of athletes getting to a start line predominantly and only to run fast times. There's no thought given to where am I finishing in this race, because he came 15th in this race, and that's obviously not the headline, is it? It's the time. But no, he's still at the early stages of his career, but there are plenty of athletes that maybe would have been above him and around him, that are sort of pretty well known. Andreas Almgren, Swedish athlete, I will have been to sort of major champs, but maybe this is sort of the stepping stone for Rory.
So why was Farrell so good? How could he do a road race and be the British record holder and get the job done repeatedly at Olympic Games and World Championships? How is he one of the few that can do championship racing and also be so good at just running fast?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think if people knew the answer, then they'd almost have the secret formula. But I think ultimately it's that combination of the speed and the endurance, and also being able to time your races ahead of champs.
You were saying the other day, and I wasn't in this conversation, but I overheard you touching on, I think you might have been speaking to our friend Luke about around his ability to hold off a lot of the Kenyans. Was it the Kenyans when they make big pushes? And that was championship racing I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So what an example of that be? What would that look like in a race? How was he able to adapt his race tactics?
So ultimately, it's having the speed, and I think if we bring this back to a swimming context, is maybe kind of that last length or that last 25, is his tactic was always to sit on the inside when the business end of a race came and just never let anyone get ahead. And I think ultimately, it's the closing speed. So whether you want to say that kind of it's that last turn off the wall, or kind of that being able to raise your stroke rate as you come home. But obviously running is slightly different to swimming in that you can be very aware of your surroundings, and he was able to hug the inside. And whether it be from in a 5K race, whether it was quick from the start, or whether it was quick with 3 laps to go, or 2 laps to go, or 1 lap to go, ultimately he had the closing speed that no one could touch. And if you go back and watch his races at kind of these major champs, that was what was kind of the killer for his competitors. And ultimately, that's what people like Rory Leonard and Alex Yee, and people like that are trying to replicate in major
Well,
champs coming up.
it's really, really interesting, and that's why obviously he's one of the greatest British athletes of all time, and I think everyone's got such fond memories of Super Saturday and what he was able to do at the Olympic Games, and incredible watching him do what he did, and even picking up on a little bit more around championship racing. We're going to leave this and move on in a second, but understanding the mindset and the tactics that take place in these races. I remember you pointing it out to me. And then when I started to watch track races, those longer distance ones, they're looking up at the screen. You see Keely when she won her 800 in Paris, she's checking and she knows where she is and she knows where the rest of the group are. And that's what I found so interesting about the 1500 at Paris, where you had obviously Kerr and Ingebrigtsen, these two titans of the sport, labeled as these incredible athletes who are going to go on and win and have this great battle for the gold. And it didn't quite pan out like that. And I'm sure we'll have an episode where we'll touch on it. But even though these tactics are so important, people don't often, well, don't always get them spot on, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, and I think just the level of sport, as you well know, if you're in a race with eight people, gone are the days where possibly the best in the world are looking maybe just by one shoulder, maybe the other, because they know they've got maybe got two rivals they need to keep an eye on. A lot of the time, all eight people can win these races,
Competitive.
and I think you probably showed that in Tokyo with when you won that 200 freestyle, because anyone in that race could have won. And I think that's I'm sorry, I was just going to say, I think that's maybe a nice point for us to focus back in the water and talking major championships, going back to the Paris Olympic Games. Obviously, this podcast is likely to be titled, wait for it, Paris Ponderings Part One. Your thoughts on that, please?
I like it. I like it. I like it. I'm a big fan, and I have been pondering. Oh, I've been pondering big time.
Pondering a long time, pondering especially for this moment. And I think it's best to tackle this in not just one part, but possibly two, maybe even three, depending on how we go today. But I think if we break this into the first part, we can lead ourselves into the games itself, reflect on your journey there and entering the village. I've got plenty of questions for you then. I'm sure listeners will be keen to find out what really goes on inside the village. And then I think to round off this episode, we'll touch on that 4x100 relay. And I don't want to put any words into your mouth, but that was maybe a result where the team were hoping to get on the podium and actually didn't quite manage to get there. So I think that will be a really interesting conversation for us to have and to listen to your thoughts as someone who was in that team. And yeah, with a little as time has gone by, reflect on that. But I think to start the build up to Paris, obviously you've spoken about it briefly in our first episode last week. If you haven't listened to that, do go and give that a listen and also a watch on our YouTube, which is The Weekly Freestyle. Producer Ryan is heading that up very nicely and also popping some clips out onto our Instagram, which is also The Weekly Freestyle. And if you fancy it, do drop us an email at the weekly freestyle at outlook.com. But the build up to Paris, how did this one feel?
I think I touched on it in quite a bit of depth last week, and I would encourage people to check that out. And I kind of spoke at length around how different it felt compared to previous Olympic Games, compared to the World Championships the year before, in which I thought I had my best season I've ever had. So I would encourage people to go back and listen to that last week's episode, and I spoke around some of the difficulties. So I think in terms of actually, as we get closer to the Olympic Games, we had our holding camps in Reims. That's not how you pronounce it. It's like Rem or something like that, but Reims for the British, which was lovely, great holding camp. I was in good nick. I was holding good times. I was on good form. I knew what the job in hand was, and it will be interesting, obviously, to speak about the relay.
Can I just ask what a holding camp is?
So holding camp's essentially where you go to a meet, and we will have spoken about this over the years. While I've probably been in holding camps, actually, we will have recorded pods, but it's where you go to a major competition, a World Championships, Commonwealth Games, European Championships, not so much Europeans, or an Olympic Games, and you go to where the meet is or near where it is for a week, 10 days, 5 days, whatever it might be, depending on the importance of the competition and the distance you travel overseas, just to settle in, get a feel for the area, start training with the other people that you're going to be competing with, hang out with the other coaches. Do prep meetings, talk around tactics, talk around relays. Just start to relax before you go into the village. And that's exactly what our holding camp in Paris was for. So we were based in Reims, which was lovely. I'd definitely go back, definitely go back as a tourist. And you just train for about 10 days and settle in. And then you move through to the Olympic Village when it's your day to move through. So it's a relaxed environment. You're kind of switched off. I kind of didn't go on my phone that much. I read a lot. Played a lot of cards with Benny P and Duncan. We actually invented our own card game out there. We had that much free time, which we are still avid players of the card game. So it's a good relaxed environment. You've done all the hard work. You're just freshening up, and you're with the team, and it's a good laugh.
Yeah, and I think one thing that's associated with high performance is, I guess, that feeling of nerves. And even before you get yourself to the village, as you mentioned, maybe when you're in that holding camp, or maybe 3 to 4 months out, or maybe even, I think you did warm weather training, was it maybe the January of the Olympic cycle, or maybe it was altitude instead? Are you feeling nervous for the big competitions that are coming ahead? And I guess, how would you compare it maybe to that feeling to Tokyo if it was different at all?
Tokyo is different because it was just like bright lights, big city for me. I had nothing to judge it off. I'd been to one world championship before that, and that was like 2 years before, because obviously COVID. I had nothing, I had no judgment of what it was going to be like. So it was just that everything was amazing and incredible, and I had no pressure, no expectation. You know, I'd done this quick time at the trials, but who knew what was going to happen off the back of it? There was only quick swimmers in the world at that point. Duncan was firing on all cylinders. He was obviously the favorite going into it. It was just like, go there, enjoy it. You're 20, 21 years old, get stuck in. And that's crazy because I'm like Alfie Williams' age. They're my two little brothers. And I was their age when I went to my first Olympics and won. And I look at them now and I think, God, they're so young. But you know, they're men, they're like men of the world. They've got degrees, or they're gonna have degrees. And but you just think it, you look back and think, God, that was such a big thing at such a young age. I don't think I quite realized the gravity of the situation when I was at that point. So there were no nerves, no expectation going into Tokyo. But Paris was very different. Paris, there was a lot of expectation from within. There was a lot of pressure that I felt. There was a lot of external pressure from fans, commercial partners, people expecting you to win gold again because you won gold at the last Olympics. And it was something I don't think I was quite ready for. The weight of expectation kind of bearing down on me, and the stress that I was going to feel if that coincided with a season that wasn't quite panning out how I was hoping it to, in terms of from a physical standpoint. And my body was just not quite where I wanted it to be. And unfortunately, those two things did slightly coincide. I really, really struggled that year in terms of the physicality of it. I just could not. I put my body through the kind of the ringer, and I just couldn't. I couldn't have given more. And I can put my hands up, and that's the biggest thing for me. If I can put my hands up and say I couldn't have given more, then that's all I can do. But yeah, I would put myself in absolute, like, in the bin. And I think the stress and the pressure of the expectation kind of really weighed on me slightly. And I'm fine with pressure when training's going well. If there are things that disrupt my training, if there's injury, if there's illness like there was, if there are things that are out of my control and you have the pressure, then it all gets a little bit much for me. And that's when I found it to be quite tough. So yeah, it was a tricky period. It was a very, very different run-in compared to Tokyo. I was more experienced, so I kind of knew what to expect a little bit more. But yeah, I don't really get nervous. I'm aware of the pressure. Once I'm in the holding camp, it's fine. You know, once I'm there, I get more nervous about the training, you know, and how brutal it is, and what kind of a year of days training looks like compared to the actual competition. Once I'm at the competition, I love it. You get 3 weeks off training, so it's quite nice.
Yeah, it's a nice relaxing time when you compare it to kind of the months and ultimately years of hard graft you've been putting on. And what's it like seeing like your face on the Radio Times, or seeing bits up on billboards, or seeing those advert campaigns go out with those big national brands? Is that, and before you go out, is that kind of like, oh, that's really cool, or is it almost like, oh goodness, that's a bit daunting?
Well, the weird thing is, the weird thing is, it's like it's no different to a world championship. That's what I try to explain to people. It's like, you know, the level is no different to a world championship. It's just as hard to win a world championship medal as it is to win an Olympic medal. But the public, it just has such a bigger cut through the public. Of course it does. I mean, it's the Olympic Games than anything that even comes close. I mean, you know, it's which just kind of baffles me a little bit. It's something that's just as hard to do, but it's got so much more weight and gravity to it. You know, I count my lucky stars every single day. You know, I touch wood, say thank you to the big man upstairs that I got an Olympic gold medal instead of a World Championships gold medal. You know, I love a World Championships gold medal. I fell short by 2/100ths of a second last season. I would have loved one more than anything. But when I do get frustrated and I do get a bit down or whatever, and I'm like, God, could have been world champion as well. I just think, you're Olympic champion, and that's the one that always kind of jumps out. That's the one that you kind of hold in higher stead. So that's why you start to see your face on the front of magazines, or you have this big coverage. You know, you don't get stopped in the street. I got four medals at the World Champs the year before it. You don't get stopped in the street for that. You know, you get stopped in the street because you have an Olympic medal, you know, or you have been to the Olympic Games, or you're an Olympian. And that's what I always find slightly odd, but you know, that's just the way, you know, the public perception is, isn't it?
Whatever sport it is, I've seen people signing new contracts in different sports, obviously off the back of that Olympic cycle. And the first thing that comes out in the press release is, I'm going to try and win such and such at the Olympic Games, which is in 4 years. Well, that's because that's the only thing that cuts through to kind of the general person on the street, which is kind of crazy. But as you say, it's kind of the way things work. But once that holding camp is over, You finished in Chem. You've had your French. Do you like my pronunciation there?
Very good.
You've had your French onion soup, and your.
It's just called onion soup out there.
Oh, just
Sorry,
sorry.
just to put a
I
little
don't know
note
words there.
in the episode.
So you sorry you've had so when you're in France, you're having your onion soup. For those view for those of our British listeners, that's French onion soup. And then I guess I think you came back though. You're in Rome and then you came. I'm not sure. Anyway, you're I'm gonna say that you're bust into the Olympic Village. As we've touched on, this is kind of your second experience of it and but first proper experience of kind of a non-COVID village. So almost a new experience. What was kind of the first thing that really hit you when you opened the doors? Was it like walking into sort of somewhere like Disneyland Paris?
It was the same as the Tokyo Village. In the village is the same. People aren't wearing masks, but apart from that, it's the same. 10,000 athletes, everyone in small vicinity, big canteen. You get your bearings pretty quick. It was really warm. I remember it being quite hot that summer in Paris. It's end of July, start of August. Yeah, it's cool. It's exciting. And you go to the team's house and everything's laid on for you. And like we had 4 days to kill before we started racing. And there was a pool table. All the swimmers just lived on this pool table, just played so much pool, loads and loads and loads. And but you'd be playing pool. I'd be playing a game of pool and Andy Murray would come over and ask for a game. And I'm just in the Olympic Village in Team GB House playing pool with Andy Murray. I mean, do you know how cool that is? It's just like, and what's quite funny about Andy Murray as well, he's a really lovely guy. I've got a lot of time for him. But also when he walks into a room filled with Team GB athletes, filled with Olympic medalists, Olympic champions, everyone just goes and turns their heads because he's such a legend. So yeah, it's really cool. No, it's great. I love the village. And I had my own room, which was nice. I was in an apartment with seven other lads. It was good fun. Yeah, I had a cracking time. I really enjoyed it. The village is a cool, slightly surreal, bit of a bubble, but a cool place, but nonetheless.
Yeah, and one thing I kind of picked up on is maybe when you're in the village is you seemed a tiny bit more accessible this time round in terms of you're on your phone maybe a little bit more in terms of just checking in with a couple of people. Was that kind of a decision you kind of made that maybe you were going to try and be a bit more relaxed and not quite close yourself up, off, or is that kind of just something that ended up happening in the end?
I was more closed off than I normally am day to day. Definitely. I made an active decision to do that. And, a big case of speaking to yourself, a few close friends, family, my partner at the time, that was who I would speak to. I think Tokyo is different because of the time zone. So I think I was no different in terms of on my phone. I think it was purely the time zone. So, in Tokyo, I made the mistake of, oh, well, funny story, actually. I obviously made a mistake in Tokyo of turning my phone on after I won the 200 meters. My phone was blowing up. And I couldn't sleep. And it was crazy, and I had the relay the next day, and I was all over the place, all this kind of stuff. And I've spoken about it in the past. After I won the gold medal on the relay again in Paris, I remember really clearly thinking, okay, I flipped my phone on. I flipped my phone on just to check what my family have said, and of course, what my close friends, so yourself and our other friends out there, have said, just because it was lovely. It was a really special moment, defending Olympic champion, and we'd won the gold medal. I thought I'll just check in with the people that really mean the most to me. And I saw a message from yourself and the rest of our group of friends who'd come all the way to Paris to support me. I thought, wow, how lovely is that? I get a message from my close friend after winning this Olympic title. I wonder what it's going to say. Wishing me well. Congratulations. All the hard work's finally paid off. And it was a video actually of you guys midway through what I assume is a drinking game, doing a forfeit or something like that. Probably not something I can share on the podcast, but it's just like, and it just cracked me up because I was sat there in the Olympic Village, having just won this gold medal and just seeing this video from you boys playing some game, playing some card game. And I would have wanted nothing else, because it's just like, it's just so normal and it's just so relaxing and exactly what you're used to that. Yeah, it was just like, actually, it's just good. It's all good.
Yeah, and no doubt it could be, I guess, easy in that position to kind of get really taken aback by, yeah, where you are. And I think I've heard some people say that actually it's very easy to expend sort of that extra energy before you performed, especially in kind of a an endurance or performance based sport where you need all your energy you can get. So for being able to kind of switch off and kind of have those nice homely distractions, I guess can only have helped. And now one thing is that people say that the village is a crazy place and lots of things go on there, especially post competition. Is there any kind of secrets you can let us in on, that maybe takes us a little bit behind the curtain? What does it kind of what's Yeah, kind of what's that village secret?
So I was on the straight and narrow, and I made a quick getaway. I returned back to the UK to spend time with close family and friends. Plus, I had some work that I had to get back for. But no, I came home. But I did hear some stories from the Olympic Village. And without wanting to expose anyone too much, and obviously, people wanted to let off a bit of steam straight off the back of what was a really tough Olympic cycle. What I can tell you is that the Irish house was well known for having the best nightlife. They do like a Guinness out there, understandably. And they really, really hosted some of the best parties, apparently. I think, if you watch the Olympic Games and you see some of the live sports, you see our incredible Team GB athletes performing at the highest level, and you look in the crowds and you see a few other Team GB athletes, they will probably not be, they'll be feeling a little bit worse for wear, even though they're at an Olympic Games watching, some of the best sports in the world. They might be slightly tired from the night before, I think it's fair to say. So yeah, it's good fun, and I think people do let off a lot of steam. In terms of secrets,
What about that
it's like,
muffin? That muffin.
oh yeah,
What about that
the
muffin?
muffin man. Yeah, he's a good guy. Chocolate muffins, nice and wholesome. Yeah, I don't know, the Olympic Village, it's like a uni campus. There you go, to put it in perspective. You're staying in these apartments that you know you're going to be in for a short while, and then you're off and you can just enjoy yourself. So it's a lot of fun, I've heard.
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
Thanks, mate.
He doesn't know.
I don't know.
He doesn't know. And I thought what I was just thinking there is, I think also we will in part two possibly go to that kind of post competition feeling, and especially as you allude to there, obviously I was in Team GB House with Global, and it was so funny seeing kind of the athletes coming through the door as they'd won medals, and you'd have a real variety of people who had maybe been there and done it before and maybe slightly older. They'd had a late night with interviews and stuff, but they'd got a few hours sleep, but others you could tell that they'd just been wheeled in by someone who had to basically get them in front of the cameras. And I don't know if I'd won my first Olympic gold medal, then I mean I think you're allowed to do
And
that.
I've seen you on the J2Os. You're a fiend for them. You can sink two of them in at least 4 hours. So it's not
Exactly.
bad going.
Exactly.
Some
So
people were rocking up to Team Tree House having come straight from a party. So a little bit worse for wear.
I'm sure we can tell a few stories on, or I can from the Team GB House side of things, because it was quite entertaining. But let's get into kind of our first bit of racing and your first event. I guess I'd probably describe it as kind of one of the one of the three key events you had out there, and this was a relay. And I believe I'm right in saying that it was kind of one of the your earliest event, and this was split into heats and final, I believe. You took part in both, and just kind of to set the scene here, the 400, the 4x100 freestyle relay, all men. You've actually got a squad of about six guys that are probably even more, six to eight guys that are really strong swimmers, and certainly within a shout of being around the podium places. That's caveated with obviously, on an Olympic final, Olympic stage, there's no podium is ever guaranteed. And as we kind of mentioned, there are so many strong teams from across the world. Let's dive into that. You were in the relays, sorry, in the heats, and how did that all go? Because there was an interesting selection dilemma sort of conversation that was created from, I think, from outside of the team.
Can't remember who's on the heat. Calhoun did. I did. Whittle did.
And Jack McMillan.
McMillan.
Oh,
Did
maybe
he?
not
On
the
the heat?
100. Oh, no, maybe that was the
You're thinking the
200.
4x2. You're thinking the
Yeah.
4x2. I can't remember who's on the heat. But no, that people can switch out as people who aren't massive swimming fans might not know, but you can switch out the team from the heat to final. And that's what we did. And we had definitely Alex Calhoun did the heat and then not the final. The 4x1, first event, you want to blow off some cobwebs. You want to kind of get into it. You want a good swim. There's quite a lot of pressure on that first one. So make sure it's a good one, because that can often define your form for the rest of the meet. And you want to make sure you're off to a good start. Look, we wanted to win that. if I'm being completely honest, we should have won the World Champs the year before. We were going in by far the fastest. I was swimming really, really quick times at that point. I was being saved for the final because I had such a rigorous event schedule that year. And we got disqualified in the heat by a matter of hundredths of a second because of Jacob Whittle's early takeover. So, yeah, it was tough. And, it just didn't come together in the final, and the times weren't quite where people wanted them to be. Any of us, I don't think, they just weren't quite up to scratch, unfortunately. So we wanted to win that, and it's tough to start off your meet with a, is disappointing the right word? Not quite where the result we thought it could be. So but you've got to park it and move on to the next one. I think we came fifth, sixth, maybe
I
in
think
that.
so, yeah.
So we could and should, and I still believe that we can win that relay at some point. I really do believe we've got all the. I mean, I've been 46 mid, 46-6. Duncan's been 46-1.
Yeah.
Matt's been 46, and then we've definitely got a 47 low swimmer. So that's knocking on the door of the bloody world record, So it's doable. Just people need to come together at the right time. There's always not quite everyone together at the right time. It's the same in the 4x2. If everyone did their fastest times, we'd smash the world record, but it's just getting everyone doing their fast times on the same day, which is quite tough.
Yeah, and would you say that's the that is literally the key? It's just the four of you just need to be at your absolute best at that moment, or is there also an element of everyone's got to be can you get away with everyone swimming like very well but gelling as a team nicely, or is it just purely each individual has to be completely on it? Is there kind of a team bonding point to swimming fast, or is it does it not quite work like that?
Yeah, relays, I've spoken about this in the past, relays are a slightly different feel to them. You want to do it for the team, you're doing it for something bigger, you don't want to mess up, there's a different kind of pressure. You have a rolling start with which some people respond better to. So yeah, it is quite different. And sometimes that's why you see the best swims ever. That's why you see some times that are never able to be done anywhere, that are greater than their constituent parts. But also that's why you see sometimes people going out way too quick and dying because they get too excited by the whole process and they don't stick to the race plan. So yeah, I think if you can channel that extra energy as a force for good, then it kind of put you in good stead. But yeah, at the same time, it can knock you off. And we're going to speak about the 4x2 down the line, and that's an example of a really call it boring. It was a boring swim. It was a controlled, sensible. We knew what we had to do, get the job done. No fireworks, no tight turnarounds, nothing like that. We were so far ahead in the lead in the world rankings that we knew that what it was going to take. And that's a completely different relay to what the 4x1 can be. The 4x1, it's day one. These boys are fresh, these big sprinter lads. They've not had events, back-to-back events. These guys are on great form and they're going to be showing it on day one. They are fighting for their spots later in the week in the mixed relay and in the 4x1 medley at the end of the week. These are when the Aussies, the Americans, the Chinese, they bring in their real big hitters. These are the big boys, 100 freestylers, and it really shows in that final. It's a real scrap, and unfortunately we were the wrong side of that scrap.
No, I know. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting insight there, and maybe something that maybe that the selectors will look at in terms of how do we get that dynamic right? Because you always got to be careful that if you've got swimmers thinking about later races or coming off, I guess previous races, but this is an early race, is how can we get our guys in this case, obviously girls in different relays, kind of up and ready to go for that specific moment, which is, I guess, there's the ultimate thing in terms of delivering. But yeah, I think it was a really interesting from an outsider's perspective, as you mentioned, with the relay, because there aren't many. It's almost a little bit like X Factor's houses, or judges' houses, because in the morning, I think it was, or was it day before? Usually morning, you have four people will go out, and you say that a couple of people will quite often be rested for the final if they're your strongest swimmers, but that's not always the case. And someone may put in kind of the swim of their lifetime in the morning, which maybe throws a question mark over that selection for the evening. So it's so funny on Twitter, we've got loads of different accounts saying, "Oh, this person swam well, this person shouldn't be there, this person should be." But it's all got to be remembered within, I guess, that wider context of the meet, and also delivering in the final as well, which is key.
And people on Twitter, they don't know what's going on behind the scenes. They don't know where people's heads are at. They don't know who's going to crumble. They don't know how these people are going to act in these big finals. The way I see it is that I do the relay and I do the heat, and I've done loads of relay heats. But look, I want to make it as easy as possible for the selectors. I want to make it a no-brainer. I don't want to make my coach or whoever representing me has to really fight for my position in that final. And that's how I see it. You want it to be safe and you want to really, really make it easy for them.
Yeah. And yeah, I think all of you guys did that. And looking back, it was one of those races where there was so much talent across the pool and strength and depth that, you know, it was never a sure thing. But yeah, definitely a good start to the week. Back in, I guess that would have been July now, and kind of sets us up, set you up for your week there. But this kind of discussion will set us up for further Paris discussions in part two. And as you mentioned, we've got plenty to get through, including that 4x200 freestyle relay, which was an absolute golden moment, arguably the highlight of kind of GB Aquatics race at Paris. And also moving on to kind of the 200 IM, which was your individual race, a head-to-head with Leon Marchand and your good colleague Duncan Scott, and also a battling illness out in Paris. So there's plenty there, and then we've got all the post-game stuff as well. But just before we say goodbye for this episode, we always finish with the weekly freestyle, and our catchline is TWF, anything goes as long as your turns are legal. So Tom, I've got a couple of questions for you, Paris related. Let's see how you get on. I want to warm you up for some later games in the series. So, swimming related at Paris, top three countries in the medal table. And for that little extra, can you tell me how many golds they won? Do play at home. If you're playing in the car or you're with your friends or your family or your dog, just pause it now, have a think and see how you get on.
Top three countries by medal.
In the swimming, yeah. And I need to know, this is by gold medals.
By gold medals. Okay, I'm going to go America first.
Yeah.
And then Australia.
Yeah.
And then China.
No, France. France were in third.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, of course.
France were in third. Might have to bleep that.
Yeah, that one sweat bag.
That guy. And how many medals did they have?
Gold. Or
yeah,
total.
Just golds.
Okay, France will have got four.
Yeah.
So Australia got six.
Seven.
And the US got 10.
Eight. 8-7-4, USA, Australia, and France. Who would have thought that? So moving away from our international companions, what about GB's medal haul? I want to know how many medals in total and what colour were they?
Okay, got 4x2 gold. And then we got Duncan Silver, Matt Silver, Benny P. Silver, and PC Silver. That's five medals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
That's five medals. Just like that, one gold,
which
four
is mad because
we
got so many in Tokyo.
Yeah,
so many in Tokyo. I mean, look at that. I got a gold in 200 in Tokyo. Peach got gold. We got gold in the 4x2. Duncan got silver in the 2IM.
Feels like I should be helping you now.
There was a medley relay silver.
Oh,
there
was
a
plenty of mixed
relay gold.
Yeah, a few mixed ones.
I think there were more medals than that.
Did Peach
get
more two?
Medals.
Individual.
No, Peach's got 100, didn't he?
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, the point goes is that yeah, there was definitely Tokyo compared to Paris was yeah, slight difference in medal haul, and I'm sure we can get into that as well. And it was interesting listening to Chris Spice speak at the GB event, the GB Aquatics kind of summing up awards evening, and just touching on that. So I'm sure that's a conversation for a later date. Final question: how many medals and which strokes for Leon Marchand?
He got gold 4IM, 2IM, 2 flight, 2 breast, and a bronze in the 4x1 medley relay.
Yeah, sounds about right. I've got four golds here. Right. So that finishes our episode. Nice way to finish with Leon. I hope he's okay. He's probably training
we'll have to get him on at some point.
In the States. Do you think he'd come on?
Yeah, would he come on? He'd be lucky to come on, mate.
He has to come on.
He would be honoured.
Do you know what some big summer swimming news is?
Yeah.
Is that you collected one of the greatest swimmers of all time's numbers.
Oh my God, yeah. No, I got Michael Phelps's number.
You got Michael Phelps's number.
I've got Michael Phelps's number on my phone and I've not replied to his text.
That's, wow, you must
which
be big.
Is mad. Yeah, so who's the real winner? No, he just texted me. He gave me
what's,
his number.
What's the last text? What's the last text you've not replied
so
to?
He texted me. So basically, I met him at the Amiga event and he gave me his number and he just said MP. He just texted me MP because that's so I knew obviously who it was and stuff like that. And I don't know, do you reply to that? TD? I don't know. how about TD? Can you come on TWF?
Yeah, just TD. Yeah, just just go with
TD and
letters.
then TWF question mark. Yeah.
And I think he'll know. Maybe
He
that could
would
be
definitely
a nice game for us, is you replying to Michael Phelps and seeing if he replies.
know. You know what? I've got some more thought. We're trying to come up actually for all our listeners with a new game for the podcast. We've got a few ideas and a few things that we're going to ask you for. Next week, we're going to introduce you to an exciting game that Alex, myself, and our friend Luke played after our round of golf, which can be quite cutthroat actually, with the using Instagram. But no, we've got a few ideas. So any different ideas of games that you think we should play, then do send them in. But yeah, I think that probably rounds us up.
Yes. Sorry, I just lost you for a second there. My microphone went out. But yeah, any games, any ideas, any thoughts, do send us a message on Instagram. Drop us a comment on YouTube or Instagram. We need to decide for a game to allow the what was it?
Carolina Reaper.
Carolina Reaper Peppers video to
I'm gonna watch
reemerge.
that as soon as we are off this. I'm gonna
I've
give that a
already
watch.
watched it today. And yeah, we've got our email, theweeklyfreestyle@outlook.com. So yeah, send us a line and we'll catch you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. See you soon.